don't know if you're even the right people to call, but L.A. Center referred me to you.
Yes.
And do you work for the Air Force?
No, sir. It's a private scientific organization.
Does the information help anybody?
Yes.
Because nobody else seems to care what I saw. Yes,
it all goes into various research programs in this field.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a pilot for IBM.
Yes.
And we're at flight level 450. And about 20 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
And we were coming from Hawaii. And we were about 100 and... right when I saw this guy, I took note of where we were, about 150 miles off the Santa Barbara, off the Santa Barbara 195 radial.
Okay.
And it's high low 450, and this target comes up, you know, right next to the wing, and he was getting closer and closer, and I said to the, L.A. Center, I said, what's the distance and the speed of that target? And they said, there's no target. And I said, well, there is. And they said, no, there isn't. So I just let it go. I just thought that, you know, either it was an Air Force guy or something that wasn't on a flight plan or a primary target without a transponder. Are you a pilot?
No, sir.
But you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes.
Okay. And it got closer, and it was not an airplane. I can guarantee you it was not an airplane. And hovered right at our airspeed, right next to us for about, not next to us, I'd say 1,000 feet away, but the same altitude, for about 8 or 9 minutes, and then took off at the same altitude, about triple our speed. He was a speck in about less than 10 seconds. We couldn't see him. The visibility was perfect today. And then he was sort of a speck and stayed in front of us, and we waited there, and we caught up with him, and then he kept with us again for another 2 or 3 minutes, and then just climbed almost straight up, and no thrust, no wings, no visible, no sort of, no direction to control it from, just sort of, just operate, no jet engines, no propellers.
Okay, what was the defined shape?
The saucer about 80 feet in diameter, and had floodlights on it, recessed floodlights that weren't turned on, but you could see the lenses. They were green, yellow, and red. And
were those around the perimeter?
Around the perimeter, yeah.
Okay.
It didn't rotate. It just, you know, stayed stationary. But you could see there were lights. I mean, they looked like lights. And no way to see out of it, no opening, no door or anything on it. It might have been a door on the underside, no thrust, no noise. And they couldn't see it on radar, and we have radar on our plane, and we couldn't see it on our radar either.
Did you pick up any turbulence from it?
No, none.
Okay. How about instrument interference?
No. Everything worked fine.
Okay.
I know it sounds crazy, but I've been in the Air Force, and I've flown for a long time, and I've seen, you know, I know what things look like, and this is broad daylight. And my co-pilot and myself are the only two in the plane. Nobody else is in it.
Uh-huh. Okay, sir, how long did you have that under observation?
The first time for about 8 minutes, and the second time for about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Conservatively, because we used to have to, gauge, gauge distance pretty accurately.
Okay, did you get the feeling that you were being watched?
Not really. I think whatever it was seemed to be more interested in the airplane than in us.
Okay.
I don't know why I get that feeling, but I mean, there's no windows or anything in it, so there's no way anything could look out of it.
Okay. Did you get any more input from Los Angeles Center?
We just told them what we saw, and they said, oh.
That was, oh, I see.
And they said, they don't. I said, well, it's not on radar, and it's not a threat to you. And they said, it's probably just a reflection or something. And so I said, well, what should I do? And he said, well, don't do anything. Just stay there. So then when we landed, a few minutes ago, I called off on the phone and said, do you want to report on? And they said, no, we don't care about that anymore. So he said, just call this number, and they'll take the information.
Okay.
I don't know why they don't care, but they don't seem to.
Could we get your name?
Yeah. London, WC2, England. Well, I fly for IBM. I fly one of the three aircraft we use for world transport. So if I'm not in London, I'm usually in the air somewhere.
Oh, okay.
If you have any trouble reaching me, my co-pilot has an address in the United States.
Okay, what is his name? Well, sir, we sure appreciate you reporting this.
I know, it doesn't, it's only, you know, his and my word, you know, but,
Oh, no problem, because the majority of these UFO reports will come from single witnesses anyway.
Oh.
Two at the most, and that's about the majority catalog.
The thing that surprised me is we just, you know what the ADIZ is?
Yes.
The Air Defense Identification Zone.
Right.
Well, the radar at that point is very, very, you know, precise, and it can go all the way down to the surface for Russian aircraft. And they always, always tell you whenever you cross that to let them know, because they'll send fighters after you if you don't tell them you cross it. And we had just crossed it about 5 minutes before this. And so I figured, you know, we're still inside that zone and they've got to see this guy. But they didn't. And so he went right through that area without being... The speed conservatively, I would say, it was at Mach 3.
Okay. Is there any question in your mind about, or any doubt in your mind about this being a metallic object?
Yeah, there is. I couldn't say it was metal, because the sun didn't reflect off of it, and you could see it rippling the way canvas does on wings on older airplanes.
Uh-huh.
You could see the air had an effect on it. I can almost say for sure it wasn't metal.
Okay.
And if it was a metal, we have a particle sensor in the airplane that we use for the airplane we just bought from Shell Oil, and Shell used it. They were using part of it for geographic geological things.
Oh yes.
And had metal sensor in it, and which can sense something to do with the earth. But it can sense when you get into areas of higher metal, you know, metal content in the ground.
Right.
And it didn't register anything because we had it turned on.
All right, sir. Well, we sure appreciate this very much. And if we come up with any more information on that, well, we'll get back to you and let you know.
Neil, what do you do with the information now?
Well, of course, we break it down, go through a data reduction system, then we feed it in or catalog it into the data bank, and then we use this data for the various research programs in our study in the field of ufology.
Well, the idea, though, I mean, you and other people believe that they're not from this planet, don't you?
Right.
I mean, there's no doubt about that, is there?
We feel they're not manufactured here. Well, of course, it goes further than that. There's scientific organizations and kind of off the record unofficially. I guess NASA's convinced they're coming from deep space.
They are.
So... It's still a very controversial subject, but we've been in this study for 22 years, and we feel that they're coming from space.
Yeah, well, this thing is very, very maneuverable. Like, it moves sideways once, very rapidly, and I think it sort of had the power without too much trouble at all, just pushing us out of the sky. I sort of got that impression.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it seemed like if it could move laterally, if it wanted to. You could have just sliced the ship in two with no trouble at all.
Was that movement toward you?
Yeah, it was. It moved laterally, I'd say about 100 feet, and stopped, moved laterally back. But I mean, it was instant, like, you know, as long as it takes to blink your eye.
Right.
And the acceleration was not, because, you know, I used to chase MiGs during the war, which are, the MiG-25 is fairly powerful. And when they give it full thrust and full afterburner, it was fast, you know, but there was that momentary delay, what it takes for the power to, for the output to have an effect, you know.
Right.
Well, this didn't have any, there's no hesitation. It just went from our speed, which is about Mach 9.4, to about triple that, I mean, instantly. No hesitation, no noise, no interference, no thrust.
Stopped without slowing down.
No, it sped up without... Oh, yeah, then when we caught up with it, he was just sort of waiting there. I think he might have been hovering there.
Uh-huh.
because we caught up to him pretty easily. I don't know why he went ahead and stopped.
Now that fits the pattern of other reports.
And he stayed on the left side, on the pilot side, my side, the whole time. He didn't, he never crossed to the other side.
Uh-huh.
Which I don't think it sort of surprised me. I wonder if they know that the pilot commands it on the left side.
Well, they pull, I think so, because they pull the same trick when they, we have what we call close encounters involving vehicles on the roadway. And the majority of the times they'll always come in on the driver's side.
Yeah. But I had the feeling, I had a feeling of weakness there. I had a feeling that it would have been very easy for them just to, you know, have some sort of energy to push us out of the sky. You sort of get those feelings, you know.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So... Oh, that's what I'd tell you, so you can know. And there was a United jet 4,000 feet above us during part of this, and they didn't see it at all.
Uh-huh.
We asked them, they were looking for it, and they didn't see it. So.
All right, sure. Well, we thank you again.
Okay, fine.
Bye.